Well, people are throwing in the towel nowadays, and they're throwing in the towel at record rates. You hear this all the time. People are throwing in the towel, for instance, on their marriage. You know, he said for better or for worse, but it got worse than I ever expected. So I'm going to throw in the towel on it. There's people I know that are even throwing in the towel at jobs nowadays. They have a good job. Things are working fine. But it wasn't what they expected. It didn't measure up to their expectations. So they threw in the towel and, you know, went to go look for something else. A number of us maybe even made New Year's resolutions this past week. And here we are, January 3rd, and let's just admit it, some of us have already thrown in the towel on our New Year's resolution. Well, making a commitment is easy, isn't it? But keeping the commitment is hard. Can I get an amen on that? Keeping the commitment is hard. But I'm going to say that today we're going to learn how to be different. We're going to be people who don't give up. I want you to turn to your late neighbor and say, I'm not going to give up. Turn. I'm not going to give up. You didn't look like you meant it. Let's do it again. I'm not going to give up. Good. That's better. Well, we're going to learn today a little bit how not to give up when things get tough. Well, first of all, I'd like to talk about why we often give up. You know, what happens that tends to make our commitments fall by the wayside? And these aren't right out of scripture. They're just sort of a life observations as I thought back on, you know, why we give up. And the first thing that came to mind is isolation. We give up out of isolation. I like to work out at the YMCA. I go to there in the morning and the alarm goes off at 5:30. And if you are probably just like me, when the alarm goes off at 5:30, what is the last thing you want to do? Get out of bed. And quite honestly, I probably would stay in bed if it wasn't for the fact there's a person down there called my workout partner. And I know that if I'm late, all of a sudden the text messages are going to start coming across the phone. You know, where are you? You're not here. So I get out of bed because I have an accountability partner. But if we are in isolation and it's just us holding ourselves accountable, we tend to give up on our commitment. And that's not just true for health and diet plans. That's true for spiritual things. We commit we're going to read through the Bible in a year, and it's hard unless there's somebody we're meeting with. Somebody who's helping hold us accountable. Now, in case you didn't realize, we are not designed to do life alone. We're not all little Lone Ranger individual Christians. We need one another for support and encouragement to make it through all the way to the end. Now, this be real practical here. I know this morning there are probably some of us here who are struggling with issues of sin. And you're saying, well, I've tried to give up this issue of sin, but it keeps coming back. It keeps rearing its head on me. Let me tell you what. Get out of isolation. Real practical. Find a good Christian accountability partner who you can trust, who you can talk to, who you can share your struggle with. And I'll tell you, when you take it out of isolation, you'd be surprised at how quickly the grip of that sin is loosened on your life. So if you're struggling with something, then hey, get out of isolation. Another reason that we tend to renege on our commitments and back off, we move from isolations to complications. So let's face it, life gets complicated. We start out with good intentions. You know, we're going to get this done. We're going to make it all work. Maybe some of us said we were going to get all the thank you cards to people who gave us those nice Christmas gifts done. And then we came down with the flu this past week. And what happened? All the hopes and all the good plans went right out the window with complications. Or you're at work and you think you're going to lay out your job, how it's going to all get done, and then that phone call comes in. And everything falls apart with complications. Another reason we don't keep our plans. People. It's people. And I see this a lot in marriages. You know, it takes two to make it work, doesn't it? And you start out with a commitment for each other, and then maybe something turns sour and the one person's like, you know, you may be trying to make it work, but I don't want to make it work. No, it's not going to work for me. I'm shutting this whole thing down. People, you know, make it a lot more difficult to keep that kind of marriage commitment going. It's the classic one where it's the anniversary and the wife is going to do something really nice and great for it. And she plans the evening. She has the kids at the babysitters. She has the lights dim, the candles on the table, and his favorite meal is cooking on the stove. And she knows he's going to walk through at 6 p.m. and she's in that pretty dress and she's all excited about this. And about 5:50, the call comes home. Honey, I'm totally swamped. I have to work late tonight. But honey, it's our anniversary. Oh, it is? Oh, man. Yeah, that's right. Uh-oh. People make it hard to keep the commitment. And so what happens? People are throwing in the towel. And they're throwing in the towel at record rates today. But people are not just thrown in the towel when it comes to diet and exercise plans. They're not just thrown in the towel when it comes to marriages. People are thrown in the towel when it comes to God. I mean, they became a Christian and they figured they knew how life would unfold. You know, God's in charge. Now everything's supposed to be perfect. Life is supposed to get better. And you know what? It oftentimes doesn't get easier. Many times it still stays very difficult, and sometimes it even gets worse. And in the midst of that relationship with God, we get ourselves in a time of isolation. You know, we pull away from meeting with our small group, and we don't have Christian fellowship. Or we get busy on the weekends. It's called complications. And then all of a sudden we're not in the fellowship. We're not part of the body of church. And then every once in a while, you know how this goes. And if you've been around the church for a while, you know this happens. Somebody in the church body does something that really irritates you, that gets under your skin. And what do? You say, oh, well, God, if that's what your people are like, I want nothing to do with it. Isn't that true? And so you say, hey, I'm going to throw in the towel on this whole thing with you, God. And sometimes some of us are a little more subtle about how we throw in the towel. We're not going to maybe walk away from church altogether. We're not going to walk away from God and give up totally on him. We think there's something there. But what we choose to do is we choose to go over to the wall and we decide to flip off that emotional light switch. And God, you used to be my joy. You used to be the thing I was really excited about, like the love of my life because of what you did for me in Jesus Christ. But now it's getting a little bit old, you know. Life is tough and you haven't answered my prayers. So, you know, I'm not really that excited about you anymore. Go to church, yes, but it's sort of just the thing I do. Reminds me of that story of the middle-aged woman whose marriage seemed to go dry. She called in to the radio talk show host, and she said to him, she said, I don't know what to do. I don't think my husband loves me anymore. And the radio talk show host said, well, why do you think that? Well, we used to spend time together and have those deep, intimate conversations together. He would buy me flowers and spend time with me, just staring in my eyes. And we talk, and now it's all gone away. He comes home from work, and he just sits down and plops on the couch and turns on the television. And I don't really hear anything else out of him. I don't think he loves me anymore. Well, unbeknownst to her, her husband happened to be listening to that same radio station at work that day. So who came home? He looked her in the eye and he said, listen, I told you I loved you at the altar. If it changes, I'll let you know. You know, the deal is the marriage still there? Yes. But the joy, the intimacy, the emotional light switch is turned off. And many times that's sort of what happens for us in our Christian walk when we get disappointed with God. Things aren't turning out right. We want to turn off that switch. Well, when we last left off in the book of Hebrews, that was actually about a month and a half ago. And we are back into the book of Hebrews today. And we're going to talk a little bit in the book of Hebrews about not giving up on God, not turning off the emotional light switch, and not throwing in the towel on Jesus Christ. When we last left off in the book of Hebrews, we had just finished, if you remember, about a month and a half ago, we had just finished Hebrews chapter 11. And we had seen a number of great heroes of the faith in that 11th chapter. People that were just incredible. They just exercised incredible faith in really tough, tough circumstances when it would have been easy to give up and throw in the towel. Remember Noah, the guy who built that massive luxury yacht liner in his backyard for 100 years and took 100 years of ribbon from his neighbors? Like, how are you going to get that to the ocean? And Moses, who grew up in Pharaoh's household but turned his back on all those riches because he was looking for a better treasure than even the superpower of the world could offer. Remember Abraham? When he was called by God, he left the city of Ur. And Ur, as we know, was a modern city of that day. It was a comfortable city. It was the metropolis. And he became what you call a gypsy for Jesus for the rest of his life. Never actually seeing the land that was promised, but dying in faith. Today, we begin Hebrews chapter 12. And this is a really important point. This is what you call a hinge in the book of Hebrews. Because we move from all the information that ends sort of in chapter 11 to going to chapter 12. All of a sudden, the writer of Hebrews is now saying what this all means for us. And there's a lot of application and really good stuff from chapter 12 to the end of the book. And so that's what we're going to do. And we're just going to look at this morning one verse. By the way, I will make faster progress than one verse a week in weeks to come. But today, we're just going to look at Hebrews chapter 1, or chapter 12, the first verse. And it's so rich. Let me read it for you. It says, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us." It's pretty straightforward and simple. If you look at that, there's actually three steps or three pieces of advice about how to make it in the race. How to not give up in the Christian race of faith and make it all the way to the end. Let's go ahead and look at these here. There's the first one. Three reasons or three ways we can make it. Number one, I can make it because I have home court advantage. We do. We have home court advantage. He says in verse 1 here, beginning of it, says, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses." We are surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses. Now, who are these witnesses that he's talking about? I think without a question, of course, he's talking about the people that we have seen in Hebrews chapter 11 that we studied in the weeks previously. These great people of faith, we are surrounded by them. And the picture here is a little bit like the Monday night Vikings versus Bears game. Anybody watch that? Very sad game. A couple people think the Bears should have won over there. But yeah, it's like the Monday night Vikings versus Bears game. You have the competition that's going on in the field, but there's all these people that are in the stands that are rooting for their team, that are cheering on. And through ESPN, there's a lot more than just the ones you can see in the stands. Isn't that true? Now he says we are on the field of life. And we are surrounded by this great cloud of witnesses. The people in Hebrews chapter 11. But I think that it's a lot more than just the people in Hebrews chapter 11. I don't think that's an exhaustive list. I think that's just a representative list. Like a beginning list. Like the people who were all the other saints of faith. That they are surrounding and they are cheering us on. You know, your grandparents, did they know Christ? Have they passed away? They are surrounding us. They are cheering us on in the race of faith now. Your parents, have they passed away? Did they know Jesus Christ? If they did, I could just see them looking down and cheering you on right now. Come on, go for it. Don't give up. Give it all for Jesus, all the way to the end. It is worth it. Wait till you get here. Now, there's a difference between the Monday night Bears and Packers game and these people. The Monday night Bears and Packers game had a bunch of people that are on the field that are desperately in need of some rest, and a bunch of people in the stands that are desperately in need of some exercise because they have never played football. The difference is, this cloud of witnesses, have they competed in the race of life for Christ? Yes. And when you've actually played the sport, isn't there a whole lot more connection, a whole lot more feeling when you're watching the competition go on because you understand it so much better? That's what's going on here. Peter. I see Peter looking down upon us and cheering us on in the race of life. Paul looking down on us and cheering us on in the race of life. The Puritans, if you've read the Puritan writings, the Puritans looking down, cheering us on. John Wesley, Haddon Spurgeon, you know, all these people, great people of faith, are looking down, cheering us on. Now, I want to tell you, by the way, just before I get too far into this, that some interpreters look at this passage a little differently, and I'm just going to put it out there because I just want to be fair to you. They say that the saints who have died are not looking down on us and cheering us on. They say they struggle with that, and the reason is because they would be grieved by watching sin as it takes place, and in heaven there is no grief. So they say, well, maybe this isn't really... the saints, having gone before, cheering us on and looking down, they say maybe Hebrews chapter 11 is more like a trophy case. And what this is like you go to the high school deal and you walk down the high school hall and you see all the sport trophies in the case and you're inspired to compete better because you've seen the trophy case of those who have competed before you. And maybe that's what this text is talking about. Myself, what do I believe? As I've studied it, I really believe this is more the stadium analogy, not the trophy case analogy. I'm not going to die on it. I don't think it's one of those things that's that important to die over. But I think ultimately that's what we're going at here. Okay. So here's the deal. When I think about this passage, I get really fired up about this. I get fired up to think about people who have lived before the race of faith, who have made it successfully to the end, are on my team. You know, home court advantage, and they are cheering me on. Isn't that exciting to think about that? That as you're going through the tough times in life, you people from years gone by are cheering you on, saying, you know what, you can make it to the end. I made it to the end. It's worth it. Keep pressing on. It's great to be surrounded by a stadium filled of people who are all on your team. Second reason we can make it to the end. I can make it if I get rid of distractions. I can make it if I get rid of distractions. Second part of that first verse says, let us also lay aside every weight and the sin which clings so closely. Before we look at that section of that verse, I want to go right back to the very beginning. Hebrews chapter 12 begins with the word, therefore. Now, if you've been around the church for any length of time, what does the pastor always tell you to do when you see the word, therefore, in Scripture?
When you see the word, therefore, find out what it's there for.
Isn't that what he always says? Well, this word, therefore, is a special word, therefore. In fact, this particular word, therefore, only occurs two times in all of Scripture. And it's like a super therefore. It's a mega therefore. It's a you better turbo check the contents therefore. In other words, here we have this huge great cloud of witnesses. I mean, they're not just around us. We've got ESPN. We've got everybody watching us. So when it comes to the race of life, we better compete well. That's what he's saying. Everybody's watching, compete well. It makes a difference when you realize everybody's in the stands, doesn't it? Now, here's how he says what we have to do to compete well. First of all, drop the weights. Lay aside every weight. Now, this is a lot of athletic stuff in here. If you're an athlete, you're going to like this verse. It's all athletic stuff all the way through. The weights he's talking about are the kind of things that people would have in ancient athletic competition. You know, when you come up to run on a cross-country event or a track and field event, you don't wear blue jeans. You don't have Mr. T's gold chains hanging around your neck. You want to get rid of all that stuff. And I know the Norris guys, when they run, they go to those super light athletic shoes. They want to get down to everything so they can be as fast as they can. Some competition people, they even try and lose body weight. They're thinking, if I can run faster, if I have 5 less pounds of body weight when I run. Just lay aside every weight. In fact, by the way, in the ancient world, they had laid aside every weight, like, big time. Not out of scripture, but the way they competed was naked. Today, thank goodness for spandex. You know. But they laid aside every weight so they could be as fast as possible. And he says here, when it comes to our Christian life, when we're living the Christian life, we want to lay aside anything that will slow us down in our race for Jesus. Now, weights, by the way, are not things that are necessarily openly sinful versus openly right. We're talking about choices that are just probably poor. You know, because some of you, when I talk about these, are going to say, oh, but Pastor, you know, it doesn't say in the Bible you can't do that. Oh, but Pastor, it doesn't say anything that is necessarily wrong. You're right. It doesn't say some of these things I'm going to mention are wrong, but they are just pretty dumb choices. You know, if you want to run a 50-yard dash in a tight pair of blue jeans, go ahead. Just prepare to lose. That's the way it's going to work. If you want to win, you lay aside every weight that slows you down. True? Okay. And I just put together some things I think are weights. There's nothing necessarily overly, this is not like an exegesis of scripture of a list here, but some good things we should think about. Weight number one that slows us down, entertainment choices. We got rid of cable for a while in our house, and we got it back on because we had to watch the football games. But I'll tell you, you know, we're channel surfing through there, and there is a lot of trash on that cable, isn't there? I mean, it's just like a garbage pipeline coming right into your house. It's hard to filter that stuff through. And now it's not just the television, but you know, you go to Mr. Movies, and you expect that there's only probably about 15% of the movies in the entire place you can probably watch in good conscience before God. And now it's even video games. Hey, when I grew up, I played Pong. Pong did not need a rating system. Now you have teen, M for mature. I mean, it's hard. You know, a lot of these things can slow you down. In fact, some of them, let's just be honest, right up front, they are completely and overtly wrong. There really is no question in this. They're not weights, they're just sin. You know what I'm talking about? It'll slow you down. But I want to talk about, before I do that, let me mention Philippians chapter 4, verse 8. What should we watch? You know, what should be the things that we feed into our mind? I love this verse. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. Here's the problem with a lot of the junk we get in our media. We say, well, I'm not doing anything wrong. Yeah, but you're pouring garbage into your mind. Your mind's like a sponge. It sucks it all up. And it's in there. And what happens when we get under pressure and we squeeze the sponge? It comes out. I used to say it as a youth pastor. Say, garbage in means garbage out. What you put into your mind will come out. You know, what you role play in your mind will become eventually what you real play in your life. There is no way you can get away from that. So in Philippians 4, verse 8 says, hey, fill your mind with the good things, not the bad things. Now, some of you are saying, okay, Pastor, I don't have a problem with that. You know, I don't watch anything that's really wrong at all. I watch about 3 hours of Discovery Channel a night. And that's good. If you want to, you know, watch platypuses and, you know, snakes and hippos, I mean, it's good stuff. I'm nothing wrong with Discovery Channel. I'm not busting on Discovery. But the problem is TV can become like the dominant thought of your life, the dominant thing you do. 3 hours of Discovery Channel a night is a lot of time of television, isn't it? Because what usually happens when you talk to people, you say, hey, do you have a chance to read this book? This is a great Christian book. You'll be so edified in your walk with Christ by it. Oh, I can't. I am so busy. Why? Because you have 3 hours of Discovery Channel a night? Let's just be honest. Discovery Channel's not wrong, but it can become a weight to slow you down in your pursuit of Christ. All entertainment choices can become a weight to slow you down for Jesus. Another weight, sports. And I know the Vikings are not doing as well as we would like them to right now. And I've learned you can always start a conversation in Iowa, just talk about the Vikings. That's good, especially with Brett Favre right now. And I like sports. Many of us like sports. But sports can consume, can't they? They can become what your life is all about. I didn't say this first service, but I'll mention it here. I remember one time a church I was a part of when I was just starting in the ministry. I was an intern in this church. And what would happen was every Sunday after church, all the guys would get together and go over one person's house, the guy who had the big screen, so they could watch football and leave their wives and families alone. And finally, the pastor got enough guts up and he said, "Hey, this is wrong. It's not about watching a football game all Sunday afternoon and leaving your family alone week after week after week." It's true. The sports weren't wrong, but they became a weight that slowed them down in their pursuit for Jesus Christ. Now, some of you maybe aren't watchers. You're actually participants. I'm not as much of a watcher. My wife is the football person. She knows much more about football than I do. I'm more the participant. I'm the one who likes to work out. I'm the one who likes to run. Hey, that can become a weight too. You know, too much of anything can take you away from the main thing. And here's the deal. We are not trying to compete and get a trophy that's earthly. As Christians, we are trying to compete and get a trophy that is heavenly. What we want to shoot for is when we die to have Christ welcome us home saying, "Well done, good and faithful servant." That's what we're living for. The competition of giving our all for Jesus Christ, for making his name famous. So sports can slow us down. Third one, financial goals. Some of us, I know, have set aside some great financial goals, and I applaud people who have done that. They are scrimping, they are saving, they are doing everything they can because they want to get their first million or whatever it may be set aside. That's good, but it can consume you. I know in the cities, I've talked to a number of people that they are so financially tracked into where they want to be that there is nothing else in their life. There is no service for Christ. There is nothing. There is working late hours all the time because that's their goal, and it's too much. Another one, relationships. Relationships can become a weight in our life. And what do I mean by that? Let me talk to the younger folks around here. Because relationships can totally consume you. You find Mr. Right or Miss Right, and there's nothing wrong with, obviously, finding the right person and really enjoying spending time with them. That's a good thing. I'm not saying anything wrong with that. But you know how all of a sudden, like, there's nothing else but that person in your life? That person's having a bad day. You're having a bad day. That person's having a good day, and you're having a good day because your world has been shrunk down to that person, and you can't think or breathe or do anything else besides that person. Then all of a sudden, that relationship becomes the weight in your life, not the complement of your life. Hey, relationships wrong? No. But anything taken to an excess can become a weight. Substances. Substances can become a weight. My father-in-law, when I used to come and date Cindy and go see him and be sitting at the kitchen table, and he'd come home a little buzz, you know, right coming out of the bar, and he'd look at me and sort of get that thing going back and forth. He'd say, "Hey, you know, even Jesus Christ tipped his elbow." And that's true. He wasn't drinking Jack Daniels, though. You know, their alcohol back then was a lot less potent than the alcohol that you're drinking all the time. And the Bible does not say that alcohol is wrong. It says that drunkenness is wrong. The Bible does not say smoking is wrong. It's just a really bad choice. Like when both of my wife's parents passed away from emphysema, prematurely in their lives. It's a bad choice. Suck their life out of them. When you pickle your liver because you're drinking too much, it's a bad choice. Cut your life short. When your family goes down the tubes because you can't control it and lead it as a father because you're drinking too much. Bad choice. It's a weight. It's a weight that's slowing you down from being all you can possibly be for Jesus. Last one. Frittering. And you're like, what is frittering? It's a curt word. Okay, it's just sort of my word. Frittering is going through life completely aimlessly, purposelessly, and not making good use of your time. I don't know about you, but I want to do something good in my life for Jesus. I want to be faithful. I want to be true. I want to be a good father. I want to be a good pastor. But I want to make sure I make the best use of my time for Jesus. And oftentimes, we don't plan that. We just sort of fritter our time away. And that can be a weight, just frittering things away. Okay, somebody review with me here. Are weights things that are right and wrong? Yes or no? Not necessarily wrong, but weights are bad. Yes, that slow you down. Now, he moves from weights, which are a matter of, you know, bad choices. He moves to sin, and he says, get rid of the sin that clings. Now, what is this sin that clings? What is clingy sin he's talking about here? I was sort of wishing that he would just say specifically what particular sin this is that clings. And then I realized the sin that clings is different for each one of us, isn't it? It's the sin that we are particularly prone to, that we so easily trip into. Let me give you an example. Maybe for you, you are very gifted intellectually. Things come easy to you. And you're with other people and they're struggling with something. And you look down on them and you say, oh, how could you not get that? My grandmother could get that. It's so easy. And what happens? You have the sin of pride. Because you so easily and so quickly look down at people as opposed to look across to people. It's pride. Maybe that's a sin that you always fall into. Or maybe you're more sensual in nature. And when you see someone of the opposite sex, you find yourself having to fight thoughts because the sin that you so easily fall into, the one that clings to you, is lust. Is that the sin that clings for you? Or maybe the sin for you is not lust, but it's when you go to the mall. You know, you can't go to the mall and not get an outfit. I just have to get something when I'm there. So is the sin called materialism? Each one of us has a different sin or different set of sins that so easily cling to us. This analogy here is a little bit, it's following a lot of this athletic stuff. Where does this idea of a clinging sin come from? In the ancient world, they wore long flowing robes when they went around. And hey, don't think it's a bad idea. It's sort of like living in your bathrobe all day. It's comfy. And it was great to walk around, but it's a bummer if you wanted to run. If you wanted to run, you were in a world of hurt. Because what happens, ladies, when you try to run in a long dress? It wraps around your legs and clings to you and trips you up. And next thing you know, you're like plowing the ground with your nose. And that's what's going on here. This is the picture, he says, the sin that so easily clings to you, the sin that so quickly wraps itself around you and trips you up. So if you want to make it to the end, hey, get rid of the weights, get rid of the sin. Now, I'm just going to wager to bet here that as I've been talking about this, that the Holy Spirit, I believe, has been working on some of your hearts. Some of the things that I mentioned, either in weights or sins, you sort of winced at because you said, yeah, ooh, that's something that's I'm struggling with in my life. Hey, get rid of the distractions if you're going to make it to the end. this morning, you need to decide to be done with some things. Maybe some of you have to go home and change your cable package. Maybe some of you need to go home and say, you know, I need to get an accountability partner, and I need to do it today, this week. I'm not going to go away without having somebody I'm going to call to get it right. Because I'm going to, you know, I may think I'm going to make it, but over the long-term haul, it will bring me down. That's the way sin works. It doesn't take you in one swoop. It's like a bunch of little piranhas that slowly nibble you away until there's nothing left. That's the way sin works. Choose to be done with it. Be done with the distractions. Third thing, make it to the end. I can make it because I know the Christian life is a marathon, not a sprint. It's a marathon, not a sprint. The last part of verse 1 says this, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Quick audience response question. Who here has participated in cross country? Anybody? Yeah, that hurts, doesn't it? I take my hat off. I don't have a hat, but if I did, I would take it off because it is a really painful, difficult sport. It is hard to run on cross country. And what does he say here? He says, the Christian life is a marathon. It is a long distance race. It is not one of those short 50-yard sprints. Interestingly, I'll show you what he's talking about here. He says, let us run with endurance the race. The word race in Greek is the word agon. You're going, okay, what's the big deal about agon? That's where we get our word agony. An agon race is a long-distance race. And what does he say we compete in it? Let us run in the race. It's not a stroll in the park. It is a running, long-distance race. And it's hard. It's agony sometimes. Now, let me just tell you something here. When you become a Christian, expect this. Expect that you will probably have more problems, not less. And you're going, Pastor, what are you talking about? Well, we're going to unpack that in a few weeks from now as we get a little further into Hebrews chapter 12. But let me tell you this. When you become a Christian, sometimes you have more problems, not less, because there are things in our character that God is working on perfecting. Because remember, character goes to eternity. Comforts don't normally go. Character goes to eternity. And how do you make changes? Pressure over time. Long-term pressure over time. Refines parts of our characters in a way that nothing else can. Think of it like making a diamond. You have coal. How do you make a diamond out of it? Lots of pressure over a long period of time. We're going to look at that and why we have difficulties in our life as a Christian, and sometimes even more difficulties in a few weeks from now. But I wanted to give you that, at least for now. It says, let us run with endurance. Now, what is this word endurance? This is another interesting Greek word, because literally the word endurance means the ability to remain under pressure. You want to write that down if you're taking notes. Endurance literally means the ability to remain under pressure. Continue with this athletic stuff. You go to the YMCA, sometimes like I do, and you get on that treadmill. And so you're looking at the TVs, and you're distracted, and you're thinking, I'm going to do 30 minutes on the treadmill today. And you're about 7 minutes into it, and you're thinking, man, I just feel like Superman today. This is great. I have no problem. I should at least do 40. Man, I must be getting in better shape after all. And so you're running along on the treadmill, and you're 7 minutes into it. You're feeling good. But I'll tell you, by the time you get to 22 minutes, because you cranked your pace up a little bit now and even tilted it up a little bit more, and all of a sudden you're going, oh, my goodness, what did I do? 40 minutes? I think 30 was a better idea where I started with, because it really, really hurts. And then you find yourself just watch the clock. You know, come on, keep going faster, keep going faster. And that's endurance. Endurance is the ability to remain under pressure for a long period of time. And those are the kind of things that God uses to change our character, to make it even more pleasing to Him. And don't throw in the towel. You lose it. Well, we've talked about a lot of things we can change. We can lay aside weights. We can get rid of sin. But here all of a sudden, he talks about something we cannot change. Let us run with endurance the race that is set for us. Or as the NIV says, I think it says, the race that is marked out for us. God is the one who chose where we'll be born. God is the one who chose our parents. God chose the time we would be born. God chose to give you maybe certain athletic abilities that others don't have, or certain intellectual abilities that others don't have. And as you've gotten older, maybe you've gone through physical debilitations. Some of you maybe are wrestling with cancer or some other things. And you know, those are things, those are rocks that God has put on the racetrack of your life. You can't choose those. All we can choose is how we are going to run when we face them. Let us run with endurance the race that is marked out for us. Now, I don't want to make light of any of the struggles that some of you are facing. I know that I know a number of you decently well, and I know some of the struggles you're facing, and they are very, very hard. My heart is broken at some of the things that you go through. But I just want to be really honest and say, when you feel like you have it the worst, realize you don't. I don't. We don't. There are others, many others, who are given much more difficult races to run than we have. I was just reading a couple weeks ago about a study that just came out. It says 70% of the people on the planet do not have religious freedom. They can't worship freely. And then this past week, I was reading the Voice of the Martyrs website about a group of Christians in, I think it was Iraq. I get Iraq and Iran, the two mixed up on this one. But they gathered on Christmas Day, just 70 of them, just for a little service. And I think it's the Iranian authorities busted in, arrested the two leaders, and they've never been heard from again. Imagine having taken away from you the simple ability to celebrate Christmas and to having your family taken away from you, maybe even your life taken away from you. Run with endurance the race that is marked out for you. I know that when we came in here this morning, that there's probably some of us who are about ready to throw in the towel on God. We're sick of it. Life hasn't turned out the way we expected. There's been some really messed up turns and twists. And we're angry. We want to just give up. And there's others of us, maybe we're not going to throw in the towel totally, but we're wrestling with throwing in the towel emotionally. You know, going over to the light switch and saying, you know, God, you were my joy. You were the thing I lived for. You were everything in my life, but it hasn't turned out the way I expected. If you're there this morning, I know you're climbing a really steep hill in this marathon called the Christian life. And I know you're in agony. In fact, this text says this life is sometimes going to be an agony race. But in the midst of your tears and frustration, do me a favor. Lift your eyes up off the track. Look in the stands. Look around you. Because there's Moses. And Moses, he's coming to the feet to cheer for you. There is Noah. He's standing to his feet to cheer for you. There's Peter. He's standing to his feet to cheer for you. There is just reams of people who have gone before you, who have lived the Christian life, who have gone through difficult, dark, trying times, and they're standing to their feet to cheer for you. And you know what they're saying? Don't give up. Don't give up. Don't give up. They're chanting for you. Say it with me. Don't give up. Don't give up. Don't give up. All the way through to the end. It's worth it.